Hey, y'all. My name is Ann Wyatt. I started my career in workforce development with the state of Kentucky in 2010. That experience ignited a deep passion for manufacturing within me. I started this show hoping to raise more awareness around the bright outlook manufacturing careers have. Join me as I sit down with some of the manufacturing industry's most successful change makers and learn how they're partnering people with technology. It's time to give people more meaningful work. This is Workforce 4.0. Hey, y'all. Welcome back to another episode of Workforce 4.0. I'm your host, Ann Wyatt. I'm so excited to have Soren Peters with us here today. Soren is the CEO of How to Robot. If you've been at a trade show recently, you have no doubt seen their amazing shirts, like the I Like You a Bot shirts and the ever popular Automate Everything But Happy Hour. Those are always a huge hit. And if you haven't been to a trade show, you are probably well familiar with the How to Robot crew on LinkedIn. So Soren, I'm so happy to have you today. I love what you all are up to at How to Robots, and it's going to be such a great conversation.
Let's bet on that. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So how are you? For those that maybe have not been to a trade show, or maybe they're not on LinkedIn listening in today, describe yourself, Soren Peters, as the iconic CEO of How to Robots, and tell us a little bit more about yourself.
I think the only iconic part is probably that I'm pretty tall and have this terrible half Danish accent. But that is kind of a mix of also been living in Chicago and now here in Nashville, and then a little bit of Danish. So that might be the iconic part. But no, I think, you know, yeah, I'm fronting here at How to Robot, and I think, you know, I did quite a lot of years in IT when that was, it's still a thing, but it was growing in the 90s and grew up with that and got familiar with robots some maybe 10 years ago and was pretty amazed by maybe not the robot itself, but I mean, that's fantastic technically as well, but I think what things it tees up for us in the future, what it does to our workforce exactly, and, you know, our humanity, basically, I think. So, yeah.
And that's a huge reason of why I wanted you to come on the show today and share a little bit more about your perspectives on that. But before we get to all that, there's a simple question I got to know more about Soren Peters here, is what is your go-to karaoke song or even your favorite song?
Yeah, so the thing is, I actually do play music, which you didn't know asking this question.
I did not know.
So that also means that karaoke is probably one of the worst things you can ever put me through, because I actually enjoy people that can sing.
Yeah.
And I think one of the most awkward moments or you know, moments that I wanted to flee, probably is the right word, most in my life is in Copenhagen, where I lived many years in Denmark. There's a little bar called Sam's Bar, which is the old show you guys had that was called Cheers. The Danish translation is called Sam's Bar. Don't go into that. And someone did a karaoke bar in the middle of the pedestrian street in central Copenhagen. And for some reason, it is mostly foreign Asian tourists that decides to visit that bar. And now they just, I think, kind of took it all the way through and are now selling little boxes with Asian food as well. But they do have a karaoke scene. And I had an office pretty close by, so I went in there one night, and I've never gotten out of a place that fast again. That was Sweet Home Alabama they were singing, and it took me a minute and a half to realize, being a musician, that it was Sweet Home Alabama we were singing. I say we because we weren't, but I actually do like Sweet Home Alabama. I played myself in my old band, so yeah. I don't know. I like a ton of things, and I think depends on. Don't you feel that way that, you know, depends on where you're at and what you're doing? I hate flying, for example. I do nothing else.
I do too.
I sit in an airplane 3 times a week internationally and all that. So I do noise canceling phones, and I listen to classical themes when we on very high volume when we, you know, climb, because then my idea is that at least, you know, I'll go out with a bang in a happy way to Lord of the Rings or something like that, but I probably wouldn't listen to that, you know, at home. So, yeah.
I get that.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
I have no idea what to answer, but I can tell you no song is my favorite karaoke song.
I got you. Yeah. I understand. You know, Sweet Home Alabama is popular here.
In Europe too, for some reason.
Yeah.
Although might be a little southern, but yeah, no, it's, I think for most Europeans, that's like, hey, this is the U.S., sweet home Alabama. Whether that's true or not, you know, I'll leave that up to people too. But for us, it's a song that connects, and it's three chords, and it's pretty easy to sing. And even if you're pretty drunk, you are able to, you know, still sing it as well. So we play it in a band because we play at weddings and things like that. People get drunk. So it's, you know, it's popular.
No, that's really cool. What's your one of your favorite songs? So I did not know that you played in a band and you did that. That's really awesome. What musical instrument do you play?
I play bass.
Nice.
Because it kind of fits my voice. So yeah, I'll be a terrible violin.
Yeah. And what's your favorite song to play when you all are playing your gigs, your weddings and all those things, your shows?
Oh, man. Actually, I think it's Get Lucky with Daft Punk.
Because nice.
It's four chords. It's super simple. It kind of plays itself. But then everybody loves that song. And it's just one of those songs where you know, everybody likes it. It's that, or it's 9 to 5 with Dolly Parton. Especially being a bass player, you can have fun with that. Then, you know, it's old classic songs, Money for Nothing, things like that. I think my musical interest kind of stopped late 90s. I've kind of forgot to listen to music on the radio after that. So I don't know. Yeah.
I mean, you haven't missed much, I don't think. I mean, maybe a little, but not like, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just, you know, it's one of those things where you got your things, right? So if what I hear personally is one thing, and what I play in a band is different, because you play the things people want to dance to, and that might not be what you put on your speakers at home, because you on a regular Friday night when you had a tough week, maybe don't want to dance to Whitney Houston, you know, in your kitchen. Maybe you want to. I don't know.
I usually cry to Whitney Houston on my Friday nights after a tough week.
Exactly. And biggest female hit, I think, ever, but so originally done by Dolly Parton. So, yeah.
Awesome.
So, there you go.
That's really cool. Well, thank you for sharing that with me. That's awesome. I love music, so that's kind of my icebreaker for the show. So I appreciate your input on that. But Soren, I think that you've done such an amazing job with How to Robot, building a sense of community throughout, just like on your social media channels, but also at shows. You know, I was at several shows that How to Robot was at this year already. So Assembly Show South there in Nashville, where I think we first met each other. And then Automate, of course, and everyone is always kind of huddled around the How to Robot booth. And, you know, it's kind of interesting how you all have managed to grow your own little audience in manufacturing. So I've got to know, is that part of the How to Robot mission? I mean, I imagine that it is, right? And how important is that part to How to Robots to create and streamline that sense of community among systems integrators and manufacturers?
I think it has become like even more important that you would think and that we had thought of. And I think what you and I are doing right now is also a thing where I would never have thought, you know, podcast and you know, Manufacturing Happy Hour and all these other shows are you know, getting such big traction in manufacturing as they are. I mean, obviously, probably, but who would have known some years back? I think every time there is a big change, there's also got to be some movement, some streams to follow. And I think we just try to be one of those streams where you, back in the IT days, as I, of course, like to talk about, because then I can sound old, is that, or wise maybe even, which isn't the case, you know, but you know, there was these, I think we called them evangelists, which is probably very biblical. But these were the guys that talked about, you know, cloud or whatever it was. And I think it was the most terrible way of naming a person. If it was one thing I never want to be, was an evangelist. And you know, but on the other hand, I think I realized that those guys made us listen to some tracks that kind of moved the needle a little bit in different ways. Mm-hmm. And whether we like Steve Jobs or all the other guys, they also have their mission in, you know, dragging us along a storytelling about a mission or a way, a path to follow. So I think what we realized is, I mean, and I'll be the first to admit that, and probably have to, we thought after doing consulting for a while that, you know, just adding a buying platform on a site with all the vendors on the planet, obviously all the guys is going to jump on there, buy everything on there, and all the sellers would sell, and it's going to be fantastic. And it definitely was not, because we, you know, we never realized how off we were in timing on people doing that. I think I read an analysis once on B, and one of the things that I didn't know was that they spent a ton of money in their first years on photographers.
Huh.
Yeah, exactly. And I was wondering why. Well, because when Anne Wyatt wants to rent out her apartment, it might look amazing. You know, I've never seen it, but it might look amazing. But maybe Anne Wyatt is a dumbass with a camera. I know I am.
Yeah.
So it might be.
Yeah. You know, well, there have been times now that you mention it that Anne Wyatt's not.
Yeah. So the point is, maybe you live in a place that looks like the Vatican and Michelangelo's, you know, all that. But because you're a dumbass with a camera, it doesn't on pictures. And I think the point is that they couldn't get people to rent those apartments because they look like shit on photos, even though they weren't. So they ended up paying photographers to go out to people and visit them and take photos of their apartments so that the topics suddenly become sellable. And
yeah.
And I think one of the things we realized is that we are kind of on the same mission. We have to shed a light on a lot of things that aren't not shed a light on these days, which is like all the little puzzle things that needs to fit together for a guy to, you know, actually jump on a manufacturing opportunity or for someone to jump on a robot. I mean, what is these things? And if there is a lot of adoption in robot right now, people are buying it. But if you look at what I think is the potential, we haven't seen half of it, or maybe not even a tenth of it, right? So if you want the mass adoption,
yeah,
you got to make it popular. You got to make it mainstream. And sometimes I do feel like listening to a very clever engineer sharing his wisdom on a robot might not be the mainstream thing that is necessary. So I think what we're trying to do is that. So it's just as much as we're serious about what we do, we also need to find a way to make the approach to it a little less steep.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's, you know, that's a huge thing that I tell people often is, you know, look, I'm not the most technical person in manufacturing because that's not really my role, but it depends on, you know, who, I guess. I mean, I guess traditionally, you know, your target buyer in hardware, like, and machinery, like robotics, would be, you know, a plant manager or somebody in operations or, you know, someone in, you know, technology implementation. But really, I mean, it's not just that one person that you have to convince. I mean, a lot of times, like, you know, as think about in any business, I think, you know, the CFO plays a huge role in what's approved and what is not.
You're true.
In manufacturing and really in all business, and that's her job, right? So how do we make it approachable for a CFO even?
True.
To think about.
No, but true. And I think that's the whole point. It is that, you know, we have to get the, you know, the technicalities out of it a little bit. And because that would widen the horizon for, you know, a variety of buyers that may not be as comfortable in approaching these things. And if we want the workforce and everybody else to, you know, to change gear, if we want to, you know, be more competitive in countries where labor are, you know, both asking for better jobs, but also, you know, salary wise are a little more competitive or less competitive, then there is just that. We need to make this, as you know, accessible in a not so technical way. So I think that's what we're trying to do with the t-shirts. That's what we're trying to do with the platform. That's what we're trying to do with the consultancy, is just make this so much easier for the guys that think that this is something for them to do. But also the things that were difficult, you know, 3 years ago, how do we commoditize that a little bit more and then make room for the things that are now more difficult? They get a little bit of more space and things like that. I mean, so, you know, it's not a big thing to make an electric car right now, but I remember a friend of mine buying his first Tesla in, I don't know, 13 or whatever. And we all watched it. Today's, you know, if someone buys a Tesla, you know, might be polite and say, oh, what a nice car. But that's as far as it will go, probably, you know. But so it will commoditize. It will move downwards. And I think communication, I think what we do and things like that, your podcast here and things like that does that. It helps ease the barrier, lower the barrier to pick up of this and take some of the fears away. So if you run around with a t-shirt that says, I build robots to impress my cat, you know, or behind every robot is a caffeinated engineer, whatever they say, right? We you know, we've also got a ton of others that we didn't dare print because they could be misunderstood in many ways. But, you know, it I think it helps.
It does help. And it kind of bridges that gap, which is really what we're trying to do in not only providing solutions, but also attracting people to the workforce. And I just love that. I think you guys are absolutely nailing that part of getting the word out there on what you all are about and building that sense of community. And I'm so excited to have met a lot of your folks with How to Robot and, you know, befriend them over the years for sure. But how is that sense of community, why is that important to you? Is that important to you, Soren Peters, the person?
No, I think it is. I really think it is, because I think it's a good question. I think I realized that almost, you know, everything is in the end some kind of transaction, whether, you know, but I think even sometimes a marriage is, but if you don't ease that transaction, if you don't, you know, make the journey a little bit more comfortable, you know, then it won't be pretty funny, right? So I think that goes for everything I do as well. You know, there's just so many things that we can improve on, you know, the little journeys they have every day, everything we do and everything we try to accomplish in a day. There is ways to make it super comfortable and there is ways to definitely not do that, right? And for me as a foreigner with my terrible accent, one thing that I will say, and I'll say this to the entire American population, is stop those voice machines. Because us that doesn't have, you know, us that have a thick accent can't use them.
Yeah. So
if I call, you know, Chase and say, hey, you know, they'll say, you know, press, say yes if you're, I always say yes. Sorry, I didn't get that. You know, then, you know, press one if I want to skip that terrible invention that doesn't work, you know.
That's facts. Hey, don't feel bad because they don't work for me either. And I just think it's beyond like Southern.
And exactly. Well, I don't know about that. I think there's a fantastic little thing going around on YouTube that's pretty old, but it's an elevator someone installed. It's a joke, obviously, but they installed it in Scotland, and which is probably also a city in Kentucky. But here is the actual country of Scotland. And there's a voice elevated, active voice activated elevator. And you can just see these two Scots saying, that is just about the dumbest thing. No one, because he'll say, 11.
Right.
And the elevator say, please state the floor you want. 11. And
right,
they'll never get to that floor. And I think, so for me, if we can find a way to just help ease the journey onto something that is new or different. For me as a person, it means a lot. Because I think we all experience that. I mean, and look at my mom. She had to get used to digital ID and things like that. You know, we have to go that way. We can't just because she's my mom and 70 plus, we can't say that we're not going to do that, but we have to find a way to do that. So I remember when Denmark changed digital IDs, we have one digital ID, we can access, know, anything if I weren't living here, but when I lived there, you know, I could access, you know, my medical records, anything with one ID.
Yeah.
Super smart. Yes, super smart. But there was a lot of people that didn't know how to. So all the libraries. So when we did the change and you had to use your ID, all the libraries also equipped a colored persons with some kind of desk where you could come and get help if you didn't know how to. So the first 10 times you were uncomfortable about it, you went to the library and you had a cup of coffee and you sat down and you got the help. And eventually we actually managed, I think, to get most of the population to love or hate or whatever they do, but still use that ID. But so that's my point, is that there's a road there on adoption that we need to do. So just as much, you know, jumping the gun a little bit, but just as much as we are talking about educating the guy that is operating a robot, I think it's just as important that we look at the entire factory and say, guys, who else is uncomfortable about this thing standing in here? Right. It's in your vicinity. Why don't we just share a little knowledge about that and not only skill the guy that's going to operate it, but actually most of you who, if you don't want to, you know, walk in its vicinity, well, why don't we, you know, just help you a little bit? So
yeah,
and I think there's a part there to play.
It goes a long way, like just saying, how can I help you, to even like your frontline workforce and everyone in your organization. That just goes such a long way, and it does build community along the way. I love that.
True. So
that's awesome.
Yes.
So, yeah, well, I think, you know, I think your thoughts on community and coming from that POV as a leader are super important to not only building community, but it's also inspiring to other people that are maybe looking at you in a place of leadership and thinking, you know, I really aspire to be, you know, a CEO like Soren Peters at some point in my career. But I got to ask, for those that are maybe interested in hearing that aspect of the show today, what does that leadership look like to you? And how important is that term to your own career? And then what impact do you hope that you have on others out there that maybe have those same career ambitions?
Well, I will say, if there's anyone sitting out there thinking, I want to be that guy, would say, you know, with my Danish ancestry, that you should stop drinking at but and maybe get a quick talk with your shrink. But no, I think what we're trying to do, inspire to, is more kind of a thought leadership. But also, I mean, I remember when we started out both on the consultancy and the platform, and some of the first things we tried to share was this, you know, idea of visibility on the journey people are going through to buy a robot. And quite a lot of integrators in Europe at that time actually had a lot of pushback on it and said that that was necessary. They technically, and I got that in writing from a couple of people, they technically told us that clarity was necessary. And I remember I said, how can it be bad to get a few offers from the market just to gauge whether this is, you know, $1 million or 200? You know, some integrator might be wrong or have seen the project in a way that it shouldn't be seen. I mean, we're all humans. And I got that in writing too from a couple of integrators back in the day that said, yeah, no, you know, no one would use three quotes. Doesn't make sense. So I literally have that, people saying clarity is not a thing, and you should only work with one vendor in the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And I, of course, seen from a sales perspective, can, you know, appreciate that. The funny thing is, just imagine you're not on that winning sales team, but on the sales team that didn't win, you know, then you would kind of hope that they weren't so one way minded. So I think it's just, I think where we are now, we're definitely seen as more of a independent source. You know, when we write an article, we're trying not to, you know, advertise for anyone, or we're trying to not, you know, do these things, but literally just say, hey, there's an opportunities within welding. If you didn't know, there's enormous opportunities with welding of robots. And sometimes the integrators or OEMs felt, well, they know that. Well, no, they don't. Some do, agreed, but some don't.
Not so, everyone.
Exactly. So make room for that, please, right? And I think there's that. And I think also when we did a number of seminars when we started back in Europe about robots and people and the clashes there, because there was quite a lot of good cases to base
my favorite
stories around. Yeah, yeah.
And, my and there favorite was subject robots. No, and
I remember,
people.
I mean, one of the things we've done a lot is help hospitals automate their logistics chain and, you know, things like that. And And there's good and bad use cases. And I remember there was a case in Scandinavia that won't mention any names, but I think it was 2017, and it was all over the news that they had bought mobile robots for their logistics. And they even painted them pink and gave them names. And as I said, all over the news, you know, Brave New World, fantastic. It wasn't that much all over the news 2 years later when those robots were standing in a corner with all their wires cut because they forgot to kind of tell the people at the hospital that they were introducing them. And so the reaction, of course, was to throw bicycles in the hallways and block the paths so that they could assault the robot to cut the wires or things like that, right? So, and nothing wrong with that. All they tried to do was help the guys not push so heavy loads so their backs would be fine. But they just forgot to tell them. They read it out in the newspaper, and it was a mess. You know, so one of the things we learned is that when we started doing, helping hospitals do these things, get in front of it, talk to the people first. Hey, you guys, we're trying to do this, and the purpose is this. And you should be afraid, but we need to get you educated because now you're going to ease the life of those robots that's going to haul the heaviest loads. But that also means, guys, that you don't have to haul linen anymore. You can haul passengers, in other words, patients, and you can actually be part of the warmth that a health system should offer its patients and not be the guy pushing linen in the basement. So you're technically being upgraded, but it's a, you know, it's a song. It's something you got to sing first. If not, they'll definitely see it as, okay, so it's taking my job. Okay. You know, not happening.
Yeah.
And then there's humanoid aspect, humane aspects of it too. I read, there was a Danish guy who wrote an article this morning about, you know, obviously AI and where do we stop and where do we start and when does it become dangerous and all these things. But one of the things that I remembered was that one of the hospitals we were debating how we could help them and what we could transport with those robots, or they were technically discussing with themselves what they can transport. One of the things that hospitals do transport is corpses. So, yes. So where do you kind of draw the line? Is linen okay? Is food okay? Do you want your food transported on a robot that just moved Mr. Smith down to the, you know, morgue 10 minutes earlier? I mean, where's practicality? Where is how we see these things? And where's the normality at? You know, and how does that affect the people that are working with the robots as well?
Yeah.
How do we talk about that? So I think we learned that some of the things that we do is not only technical and what's possible, but also kind of talking into how the technology kind of merge with the people.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, So I could see that, you know, you don't necessarily want to be served by an AMR that has just, you know, awesome.
And you don't know. I get it. You don't know, but it's just, what if it's someone found out?
Maybe we have two different robots.
Well, maybe you don't want to do that because people will see the robot transporting Mr. Smith and a robot has an accident and drops him or whatever. I mean, that's the hope. There's so many discussion here to be had. I think
this
is not about robots, but a funny thing, I was in Poland and there was three factories side by side and they all did electronics and two of them couldn't get people. They had, I mean, simply couldn't get people enough. Whereas the third factory had no problem getting people, all good. And I was curious to why, because there was a line outside factory three with people applying for a job and the other two didn't. It had windows.
Oh, yeah.
So windows sometimes nice. It's as basic as that, right? You know,
yeah. I've been in a lot of plants that don't have windows.
But there you go. So maybe that's, I mean, so my point is there's so many things on this whole journey with, you know, going towards building better factories and things like that means so much more than we're used to.
Yeah.
So for me, that's leadership.
Interesting.
Shedding a light sometimes on things that people don't think about or haven't noticed, I think is, and I think doing that, then you can only hope that eventually this will pick up and people will, you know, at least add windows to their new factory or whatever necessary, just because I sat here and said, I think it was a pretty dumb idea not to. So if I'm lucky, there's one guy listening and he'll put some windows in that factory because maybe, you know,
that would be nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And yeah, natural light. There's a lot to be said about natural light. I mean, even, you know, you can like, I have house plants. So in the winter, I have to bring them inside. They hate the winter inside. They hate the winter inside, even though the winter is climate controlled inside for them. I mean, because they just do not do well without real light. And that's, I think humans are kind of like that. But as a leader, you know, I think that that's a great point that you make about like shining light on the things that no one seems to notice, but that are important conversations to have. And I really resonate with that because I kind of try to do the same. Do you ever feel like as a leader, like how do you influence and make a positive impact by doing that? Or do you feel like it's like your responsibility to? I feel responsible. I'm like, when I go out of this world, I want to make sure that these things were looked at and like we weighed all of these decisions out before we just went and, you know, went and shot from the hip and made a bunch of decisions that maybe impact our future generations. But do you feel like I get attached? I don't know.
No, I do that too. I don't know if I ever put words on that in the sense that, you know, I think, and I'm not saying I'm, you know, good at it, but I think, and this is going to be a very philosophical thing, but, you know, so, you know, let's do that quick. But I think our legacy is, you know, what we create while we're here. And I think as much as we can just move the needle a little bit every day that we're here, I'm pretty sure that every time I go to bed and then feel that I move the needle for some people, there's obviously also going to be people that are going to think that I didn't do them any favors that day because they think I'm an idiot or hard-headed or yelled or whatever I did. But but I think all in all, I think our purpose here is just to do that every day. And we all do that in our little ways. So, you know, how do you just, you know, sometimes you help people in the way that they probably didn't need help that day. And sometimes you actually do manage to help them in a way that makes sense for them that day. But I think the one thing that I always think about, whether I live up to it every day, is probably a different discussion, but at least I think about it, is, you know, you shouldn't buy people for their birthday present what you want them to have, right? You should buy what they need. And
that's,
I think,
right.
We all, yeah. So, you know, you cook steaks for your wife, and you probably, you know, there might be some that think that's great, but there also might be some that would rather have, you know, a fancy fish dinner or a little glass of rosé or whatever. You know, we're different. My point is just, on the other hand, you know, I probably wouldn't be too happy too happy about a vegetable lasagna with some homemade juice. I mean, I appreciate the thought, but I probably want the steak instead. So
I get it.
I think in everything we do, I think that's our job, right? And I think, you know, let's not install robot for the sake of you or for the robot, but let's for the sake of getting to Industry 4.0, but let's look at, you know, what makes sense and how do we get to that point as fast as possible. I think that's the chance we have to make an impact. So whether, you know, we're doing that or not, I don't know, but I think we're trying, at least. We're trying to level the playing field in buying and selling of robots in automation, both, you know, for the buyers, but also for the sellers. Although I think both parties sometimes think we don't, but yeah.
It is what it is, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And sometimes you just see what they don't, because I've seen, you know, thousands of offers across the platform now. And that also means I see all the shitty offers. That also means that, you know, you'll know which one is going to resonate and which one is not. And you tell that to the seller and he'll say, no, you know, we did that 50 times over. And okay, and how many deals did you won? Okay. So yeah, I think that's what you can do.
That's some good gems in that thought piece, I think, for sure. Thank you for that. And I'm glad that you brought up, you know, robots and use cases for robotics in hospitals and other industries. You know, that kind of leads me into this conversation about technology and how we think that technology will ultimately impact the way that we work. how do you think like in 10 or 15 years from now, how do you think we'll work with technology? And do you think there'll be that incremental of an impact?
Oh yeah. But if you think about it, where technology really picked up was when we converted it from technology to something very usable, like, you know, one of those. Mm.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So the transformation is where I think it's going to take place. So the, you know, if you're, the harder it is to program a thing to do something for you, the less of an adoption, obviously, right? Mm-hmm. But I also think, I said it before a show in London somewhere, and I said, you know, the more we say custom, you know, there is a chance that if we say custom enough, you know, we say it because we're proud of custom, and custom sounds like craftsmanship, which is great.
Sure.
But there's also a lot of things that this is not, no more craftsmanship. This is just now a thing that's been mass produced. And there is beauty in that too, right? There was craftsmanship, big craftsmanship in this, and there is, of course, every day. But my point is just that I think the mass adoption thing and you know, getting over that hump is going to be about making it super accessible. And that doesn't mean I can buy it anywhere. That makes the way I can approach it. And buying a robot is still not common knowledge. Common knowledge is, you know, is you buying a car. You know, you might be, you know, the person that has, you know, her head mostly buried in the sand for the last 30 years, and still you kind of have an idea of which car to buy and what you're supposed to be looking for, you know, crazy enough. So we kind of have that with us, all of us now, but because our dad or mom or whatever friends told us about what was a good thing, what was a bad thing. Hey, I bought this XYZ car, it was a shit show. And then about this one, it was amazing. You mix all this together and you get an idea and then you go out buy it. We're not there with adoption of automation or robots yet. So you personally maybe don't have an opinion about it. Also the knowledge to do that. So the quicker we can transform that into something that is as accessible as this, the faster it'll go. And I think we're some way from that yet. But of course, how the robot was constructed with that purpose. You know, you should be able to just record a video of what you guys are doing right now. And then hopefully, you know, someone that does these things, you know, call you back and say, hey, that's exactly what we do. You can get it for $125,000. We can have it Monday.
Yeah.
But if you call them and say, hey, I can do that custom build just for you. So, you know, you will say, oh, really? So you haven't done that before?
Yeah.
I'm not saying it'll go that way, but I'm just saying there is the potential of the conversation de-rooting. So it wasn't very fancy to say late 90s that IT had to be non-customized or standardized, because we all felt pride in that. But nevertheless, it happened. It got standardized and it moved the needle a lot. And it became mass adopted in a much bigger way. We need to get to that point. And there's a lot of people doing that, but I'm just saying that is the end game. That is the play. So what kind of technology, people always ask me, you know, what do you know of exoskeletons? I can spell it. That's probably what I know about it. I got a ton of people with me that knows about it. But again, if you don't make it mass adoptable, who cares?
Yeah, no, that's true.
It'll because be an
then it's just, yeah, well, it's hard to get, you know, it lowers that barrier to entry.
Yes.
You know?
So the minute it becomes agreed. So the minute it becomes accessible, it'll automatically favor the humans. And hence, you know, that's why my mom has an iPhone. That's why she can actually use it to a certain extent, right? And you know, and that's fine. But for her, it's enough, right? I remember now and again when I visit her, I close down all the 60 million, you know, Safari browsers that she has open because
I feel seen.
She doesn't know how to do that. But you know, that's my task. I get it. That's fine. But you know, all in all, she gets it. I think when we get to that point, you know, we're done. And that also, then you're not uncomfortable about it anymore as well. Then you're not scared about it. And then it won't take all of your jobs in your mind.
Yeah, in your mind. Exactly. And I think that there's so many options for retraining, upskilling your frontline workforce to really, yeah, as I like to say on the show, give them more meaningful work. But really, I mean, this is like leveling up their career trajectories. This is giving them new obtainable skill sets, and this is increasing their wages across the board. And I'm really passionate about programs that are doing that well.
Yep.
I don't know. I wanted to ask you, because you have kind of a better grasp on international workforce development, I think, than I would. But what you've seen across the Atlantic there in comparison to what anywhere in the world and the United States, right? As far as like workforce development programs, what is out there that exists that we could learn from here in the States? Or is there a program in the States that's doing workforce development really well and helping that frontline workforce reskill effectively, in your opinion?
It's funny, and I'm trying to remember the name of this. I saw a program in, it was up in Wisconsin, that really tried to upskill, you know, the classic manufacturing guy on the floor to kind of grow into robotics. And I wish I could remember the name right now, but they, where they really like push some people forward and make them kind of spokes for this. I do remember the company that used this, but that I can't share. But it, the company had, it is a big American company, and they do all kinds of edibles, drinkables, and things like that. And they have plants in cities where not many people live. So obviously they are super dependent on people seeking their factory, you know, to become work. And on the other hand, they also had to adopt automation, because that was also their weak side, that they were so dependent on these workers. And I was up seeing some of their development programs. They work with local high schools and schools. They leaned in. I think you guys are actually pretty good at it here in the US to, you know, lean into your high schools and you're, you know, doing programs. I mean, I saw on high school up there, I saw a local carpenter company literally sponsoring courses in carpentry. And you know, as much as it's commoditized a little bit, it also makes sense. I mean, I obviously get why they do it, because then they can go pick the right guy that they can hire. I get it.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, they're also teaching people a real craftsmanship based on real tasks. Build a roof, build this, that, and the other. And so this company and others, you know, were very good at re-educating their workforce into this journey of automation, this journey of robots. And I was very impressed that the, you know, we met this pretty big company, and the local initiative taker on the local high school was there on the meeting too, and they knew each other very well, because he realized, the factory guy knew that his biggest, you know, associate in this would be that lady from the school, because she would feed into his factory, and she also had a chance of upskilling them in the way that he would need, and so on. You know, so I think if you ask me, the big skills gap right now is, you know, we are educating and pushing, you know, robot engineers level high, very high, and super high for innovation and these big projects. But there is somewhat of a gap between that and the guy right now stacking boxes. How do we again commoditize these things a little more?
Yeah.
And create a 3-week course that really tees into, hey, you're adopting AMRs. What is go? What is no go? You know, have fun with AMRs. Do a course like that. Why don't you like tip them over and see what they do? I mean, obviously I didn't, because I'm a saint, but some of us, you know, tipped beetles over to see how they were, turtles, you know, to see how quick they can get around. And I'm no saint, so of course I did that too, just to see what happened. Why don't we do the same with our AMRs?
In the South, we do cow tipping. That is a it's fun. That is
yeah.
That
let's
is a
not
fun...
go into that. I'm from the countryside in Denmark, so let's not go into that. But my point is just that but you know what I mean. We did it when we were younger to figure out what the hell happened, and I think that's what we need, right? We know. Yeah, this is a, you know, collaborative robot, so it isn't dangerous. Come demonstrate.
Right.
Let me see all my workers be assaulted by that robot and see it not do that. But how can we build super simple things like that? Because that's going to lower, you know, the barriers. And it's also the minute you get over that barrier and that, you know, it'll turn into hopefully some kind of interest, because then it's not dangerous anymore. Let's approach it. I have that, you know, with snakes, for example. We technically have two kinds of snakes in Denmark, but no one's ever seen them. But we do. They're not really venomous. But here in Tennessee, they got venomous snakes.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm super scared of that because I didn't grow up next to things like that. And on the other hand, I really want to meet one or two or three, you know, just to see what it's like.
Yeah.
So we kind of play with that thing that we are a little bit of comfortable about. Why don't we exploit that with our workers and use that curiosity and fear, you know, by easing the fear, driving the curiosity, and make simple little programs that would just, you know, move them a little bit at the time to just get closer to adopting this, instead of making it a program with, you know, 12 courses and this, that, and the other, because it becomes inaccessible if you're, you know, if you're not really there yet, right? So yeah, I think there's a play there. I just see too few people doing that. And I think that's the biggest workforce development that we got in front of us. Again.
So I agree with that.
Right. Well, here's the phone. Yep. You know, if we manage to do it with that one by making little apps and, you know, Solitaire, I think, have filled out an enormous gap in the IT world. I know that sounds weird, but I think for people to play Solitaire on a PC helps, you know, they can suddenly use a mouse and they can, you know, it helped them adopt, you know, the technology by playing Solitaire.
I don't think you're wrong. I mean, how many of us spent a couple of hours at least of our time playing Solitaire on a PC? I mean, raise your hand, right? I mean, everybody did that. And like, not what's great is that you did. Okay. Well, you did that Minesweep one then maybe, but I mean, in people's, you know, a lot of the elderly generation still do that. I mean, they still like to sit around and play Solitaire, you know, don't lie. And like, now we have the games on the, first question, anyone's kid, my kid included is going to say, do you have games on your phone? Like, you know, but it teaches them how to use the phone and the internet and the hardware, the PC, whatever. Oh, you're right. We should have a, who's going to volunteer for that of our community? Who do you think out there, robot company wise, should volunteer? Because I feel like we should have a volunteer for that.
Yeah, I think there is a lot of robot companies that drive adoption on the technical front, like the guy who's actually going to run the robot. But I think, as I said, this needs to go a step down, you know, not that guy, but the guy next to him or over or whatever. But I think that's where the adoption, because that guy is eventually going to, you know, go into, you know, I'm not going to sit here and admit that we copied software in the 90s from companies like Microsoft. But I think they kind of allowed that we did it. Not that I, of course, never. Course, but if we did,
if that had happened,
if that had happened, you know, I would have had a copy of Windows, whatever, and or DOS in my case, and it would have, you know, it would have allowed me to play with that. Which piece of software do you think I bought when I had the money for it, right? So there is just that adoption. So I think, you know, stealing a little bit of software here and there, I'm not, you know, thinking that's a great idea, but you follow my drift here. I think that helped a lot on the adoption. And I think a lot of these things really, really, really help. So I think, back to my mom, she normally tells me that, you know, your niece is just so good with IT these days because she can use an iPad. Yeah, but we didn't have iPads, you know, when I was her age, and we had to program the thing, you know, so I don't think she's better with IT than so many of them. Being insulted personally, but no, I think we helped her adopt so that she can just sit there pushing buttons and see Teletubbies. She's 13 now, so she probably don't want to do that anymore, but you know what I mean. So I think we helped her, and I think that's what we have to do. So I think that's where the play is. I think software and robots are going to play an enormous piece in this. Education on a simple level is going to drive the adoption, because then you get the normal factory worker to say, hey, buddy, you know, I've seen this, you know, why can't we just do this? And instead of being only the innovation department, because it's such a fancy thing that they do, you want the guy on the floor saying, hey, man, we can use a robot right here because I'm sick and tired of doing this shit. I've done it for 50 years.
Yeah.
My bag is tired of it. I'm tired of it. Amen. And I saw this thing at a trade show. It's green and it really needs whatever it is. You know, boom. That's the guy, because then you solve the adoption problem.
Yeah. I love that. That's awesome. That's a really, and that goes back to like listening to your frontline workforce too. Like if something needs to be automated, you've got one out there that's willing to tell you, I promise. Right. Yeah.
So.
Well, that's awesome. This has been such an amazing conversation today, Soren. I really appreciate your time here with us. Those that are interested in touching base with yourself or How to Robot, what's a good way for them to reach out?
I'm at sp@howtorobot.com. That's S as in Soren, P as in Peter's, funny enough. Howtorobot.com or howtorobot.com in general is a good place to get hold of me. You know, I think that's, you know, go to the platform and, you know, if you're interested in robotics and thinking this could make sense to you, fill out a request. We'll help you scope out what could make sense to you guys and get you started on automation. And if you don't know where you want to get started, do the same. And we'll send a guy out to walk your factory with you and tell you what the opportunities are and what it isn't. And probably what you shouldn't do right now is one of the big things we normally say. So I think that's probably where I would lean in if I wanted to contact myself. But yeah, which I barely don't.
Awesome. Well, cool. Well, I appreciate your time and your viewpoints. This has been amazing. For everybody that is listening into this episode of Workforce 4.0, we appreciate you. We will see you all next week. Bye.